It was time, I thought, to talk again with Philip and Jane Rylance. I reached Philip by telephone at his Guggenheim office. Given the number of people I had already spoken with on the subject of the Foundation, I was not surprised by his reaction to the mere mention of my name. "We're not interested in talking to you." "I'd like to ask you a few questions." "I'm not interested in hearing your questions." "About the Ezra Pound Foundation." "I know very little about the Ezra Pound Foundation, and anyway, we have an agreement with Mary de Rockevilts not to talk to you about it." "Then, to be fair to you and Jane, I will send you written questions, so at least you'll have an opportunity to respond." "I will view the submission of written questions as an invasion. We are not about to be tried by the press." "That is not my intention. Anyway, it's only gossip." "No," I said, "it's not gossip."
"What is it, then?"
"It's history. Because when you attach yourself to famous people, as you and Jane seem to like to do, then you become part of their story." Mary de Rockevilts was somewhat more agreeable when I reached her at Brunenburg Castle, but she, too, was reluctant to talk about the Ezra Pound Foundation. "I felt embarrassed when the Rylands episode happened," she said. "They were very nice people, very nice to my mother for many years. They relieved me of worry." "Have you all agreed not to talk to me about the Ezra Pound Foundation?" I asked. "No," she said, "but we are not permitted to talk to anyone about the terms of the settlement with Yale."
"Why?"
"We were obliged to sign statements saying we would keep the terms confidential. Jane Rylands insisted on it. We also had to agree not to bring legal action against Jane, the Ezra Pound Foundation, or Yale, and none of them would sue us."
"Did Jane receive any money from Yale?"
"We were never told. That was part of the arrangement. Jane Rylands doesn't know our part of the settlement either."
"Did you receive any money?"
"Of course, but it was a financial loss for us. The open market would have fetched 10 times what Yale paid for the papers." Mary suddenly realized she had let slip a note of resentment and quickly reversed herself, as if pulling her hand back after touching a hot skillet. "But really, there's no rogue in this play. My mother simply changed her mind. Philip and Jane meant well." "As helpful as they were to you," I said, "do you think at some point Jane and Philip might have gone just a little bit too far?"
"When it was over, my mother said to me, 'Oh, these people. Now I see why I was invited to lunch.'"
This time, Mary let the negative comment stand.
"Was there a moment when you began to feel that things were not quite right?"
Mary hesitated for a moment.
"Well, yes.
Jane Rylands was starting to take control of events. A lot of little things made me wonder. There was a pamphlet printed, a lecture being given. Copyright materials not properly handled.
Culminating," I said, "with a house being given away, papers sold without your knowledge."
"Well, yes. For us, the house is a family shrine."
"Would you mind if I came up to Brunenburg to talk to you for an hour or so?"
"Tell me,"
said Mary,
"why does all this interest you?"
"To be perfectly honest," I said, "I was struck by the similarity between what happened to your mother and the story in the Aspern papers. Are you familiar with that novel?"
"We've been living with the Aspern papers for 40 years, she said.